Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Dave's Good Vibration Station with Dave Cohen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Tuned in to Dave's Good Vibration Station on LATalkRadio.com, world's most listened to internet talk radio station. High vibration. What a beautiful Sunday once again. This is Dave's Good Vibration Station. I'm your host, Davey. As you know, this is the show where we talk about anything and everything to raise your vibration. And yes, my friend, my brother, Bruce Rolls is our very, very, very special guest on today's show. First and foremost, Bruce, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm great. Thank you, David.
Wonderful. So good to have you again. For those of you that are not familiar with Bruce, if you don't remember him, he is a Vibration Station on air regular. Where do we start, Bruce? A very multifaceted, multidimensional individual, author, Sacred Geometry Code owner, starter, revolutionizer. No, seriously, Bruce Rawls, the man. So, for those of you that are not familiar with Bruce is, like I said, a multifaceted individual. If you guys have heard of thegeometrycode.com, he is the founder. Along with author, we're just going to hear it straight from your mouth to God's ears.
Okay, sounds good.
How you doing today?
It's all the same ears and it's all the same oneness. So
isn't it that
works?
That absolutely does work, and that's exactly what part of what we're going to be talking about today. So, Bruce, first and foremost, how you doing? How you feeling today?
I'm good. Yeah, thanks. Thanks again for having me on your show, dude.
Well, of course. You're the best.
Pleasure. Yeah.
It's our pleasure. It is an honor and a blessing.
Well, it's always fun. So I thought what we talked about earlier, something I didn't get to on the previous session when I was on, was talking about a familiar name that hopefully won't cause too many of your listeners to gag.
They didn't enjoy
classical Greek history, but maybe we can go beyond the mundane descriptions and talk a little bit about Plato.
Yes, you said it, and I wanted to say this is an extremely powerful and monumental figure when it comes to sacred geometry, when it comes to understanding the kind of how geometry came into the understanding of the human consciousness and started really expanding. I feel like Plato was the seed that planted pretty much the basis of a lot of what we use as our mathematical constructs from today.
Well, see, he's certainly a prominent figure in the history of a lot of different disciplines. And I was just out for a walk an hour or so ago, and I was thinking about what might be fun to share on your show, and I was reminded of a talk that I was privileged, along with about 20 other people, to hear at the Menahaus Hotel in Cairo, Egypt.
Wow.
About 22 years ago, this month, in fact.
Wow.
When we were at the Great Pyramid. And
That's amazing.
Anthony West was just happened to be there and staying there with the group that I was with Greg Braden and my mom and my wife and a bunch of other friends who I've continued to keep in touch with mostly.
That's wonderful.
And what West was saying was really one of the comments that he made, among many that were significant, that struck me, was that in ancient times, predating probably the Greeks and
wow. That's quite some time.
Yeah, like a few millennia ago.
Yeah.
That he from what he could tell, that in ancient Egypt life was studied not as a whole bunch of different subjects.
Wow.
You know, there wasn't philosophy and logic and ethics and rhetoric and math and religion and science and music and yada, yada, yada. It was all really considered to be one thing. And that really kind of hit me, you know, squarely between the eyes, metaphorically. It's like, oh, well, of course, because there really is just one essence,
exactly,
expressing in countless forms.
Yes.
And then, of course, Plato. I think the Greeks were pivotal in carrying on some of the mystical traditions of the ancient Egyptians.
Absolutely.
And so Plato studied. In fact, I've got the Wikipedia page on Plato in front of me.
No, that's awesome.
I mean, why not? And it's just kind of like a little review of some of the classical ideas. So he studied with Socrates, and who basically his whole method was answering any question with another question. Of course, it'd be very annoying. You know, it's like if you just wanted a straight answer. But I think the questioning and that willingness to suspend our own judgments and our own beliefs,
wow,
I think is pivotal to making real genuine progress in any field of inquiry.
I absolutely agree.
So his approach, which became known as the Socratic approach, was basically, you know, challenging the assumptions by asking a question in response to each question. And then, of course, he studied Plato also studied with Pythagoras, of
yes,
course.
Yes,
you know,
indeed.
A lot of your listeners will probably, you know, have either fond, in my case, or maybe not so fond, recollections of having to learn the Pythagorean theorem.
Yes, of course.
In high school and all that sort of thing.
Yes, of course.
But, you know, these are the kind of influences that he had. And then he is credited with coming up with five three-dimensional shapes that are known as regular polygons that we also call the Platonic solids.
Yes, indeed.
Those are sort of the some of the foundational emblems or symbols, or if you will, of what's become known as sacred geometry since the work of a colleague named Drimvalo Melchizedek, who
yes,
I learned about 22 years ago, 23 years ago now, in my mom's living room.
That's amazing.
Through, again, a friend named Greg Braden that we went to Egypt with a year later and just totally rekindled my interest in the subject. I stumbled across the golden ratio as this principle of interconnectedness back
yes,
in high school.
Yes.
And I think in the previous show I mentioned that there were a couple of books, The Secrets of the Great Pyramid and This Living Earth by David Cavagnaro, that both had references to this proportion that represents a mathematical symbol
right,
for interconnectedness. And that interconnectedness is sort of a gateway idea to oneness, which is really, how
yes,
could it be anything less than that as the ultimate ideal for any philosophical system or any realm of study that,
exactly,
that leads us back to our shared kindred connections
absolutely,
that we all have.
No, absolutely.
So when I was in high school and in college in that era, I remember reading the Timaeus that Plato wrote, and it talked about Atlantis and a number of different subjects, but I was most fascinated with that at the time. And I was thinking, well, what if there was a culture that you know, we are now just coming back to replicating some of the technological advances that were there,
yes,
perhaps 25 or 6,000 years ago or something,
yes,
like that, if that's,
yes,
the, you know, the cycle of the yugas that the Hindu system refers to, of, you know, every couple of thousand years we the Earth's pole rotates on its axis,
yes,
or actually spins, and as we go around the galactic center, presumably what our north pole and south pole point to changes in the celestial heavens, and right now it's pointing at Polaris, but another 12,000 years it might be pointing at a completely different star, and then eventually return back to Polaris again. But so we're actually on this little spiral helical journey through space on this little, you know, have a solar system.
That's so amazing to just visualize in your head.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that just, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Bruce. I just got this like download of like, I'm traveling through space and time. Like, that's just crazy to think about over like, okay, so here we are and, you know, here's our lifespan of what, you know, 100 years or whatever. And then, you know, when you think from your perspective, first of all, what is time? You know what I'm saying? So, like, when you think from your perspective, oh, like, you know, here's, you know, this rotation that our Earth is on its axis with all these other, like, it's working in complete and perfect harmony with the universe. And, like, here's, like, 12,000 years ago, our planet was over here, now we're over here, and we can still study the history from when our planet was facing these certain areas and what was happening at this specific time on our planet when we were in this sort of alignment, and like what's going to happen at this time when we hit, like, it's fascinating to me, Bruce.
It is, and one can get endlessly enthralled by looking at not only history, such as I was doing yesterday when I was on a little historical outing with my wife, because she's really into, you know.
That's wonderful. That's awesome.
History, and it's fun, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think I think it can be helpful to step back and look at the why, the big why, and that's where I think I was led to later on from the explorations of sort of the fun new agey, if you will, topics like Atlantis and
yeah,
you know, recurring cycles on a you know, geologic almost time scale on our planet.
Exactly.
And then on to the five shapes, the cube, the icosahedron, the dodecahedron,
yeah,
the octahedron, and the tetrahedron, which are these five building blocks that we find over and over again, both on a subatomic level and a cosmic level, and even on a smack in the middle level, if you,
exactly,
take something like iron pyrite, which is a crystal that if you form that in you know, zero gravity, you'll find a lot of the shapes, and will be dodecahedral, which is kind of like, wow, that's kind of cool. I've got a little example of a crystal in closet somewhere of one that shows that some of those angles. It's not fully formed all the way around, but it shows some of those angles, and you can see, yep, that's definitely a dodecahedral geometry taking shape there.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I think last time we talked about, you know, the tetrahedron and the superimposing of this three-sided pyramid shape over the Earth's planetary points, where if the North Pole is one of them, you have at 19.46 degrees south latitude a ring of fire, if you will, of volcanic activity over that latitude line around the equator,
wow,
below the equator, and then this similar, you know, at 19.46 above the equator, and then there's this whole string of volcanic activity that stays at that latitude, and then, you know, there's another place in our solar system on Jupiter's moon Io where there's also, sure enough, at that same latitude, the only other active volcano that we know of in our solar system, and so that's kind of,
wow,
fun.
so that's like blows my mind. What Bruce, do you think could be the,
I mean, I want to say purpose, but like the alignment, what do you think could be the resonance, the energetic, what, like signature, the vibrational signature that creates that at exactly that latitude? Like what are some of your hypotheses?
You know, I try not to go down that road too much because I think it's sort of a,
yeah, it's a rabbit hole a little bit.
An exercise in, you know, blind excavation,
totally
of you know, a dark terrain, which will lead me to the next topic about Plato, which I do want to get to in this session.
Yeah, I love it.
But I think what Plato did talk about with those five shapes, those five regular polygons that were in our three-dimensional world that we have ascribed appropriately enough to him, although obviously they were around before he, you know, gave them
indeed.
Their names.
Yes, indeed.
And but he decided that those could represent five elemental qualities or attributes of nature, and the cube representing Earth, and it's a very earthy shape, nice little box shape, and everyone's probably most familiar with that one for the cube or hexahedron, as it's called.
Yes, absolutely.
The tetrahedron is the next one that we were just talking about, is the one superimposed over the Earth, defines two latitude lines. Two. They're not really great circles because they're latitude lines that are, you know, are less than the circumference, you know, the full circumference of the Earth. But those go around the 19.5 or 19.47, more, a little bit more accurately, latitude lines above and below the equator, and those are where this volcanic activity. Well, what could be a better symbol for volcanic or for fire than volcanic activity?
Exactly.
And that's what Plato suggested that the element was for the tetrahedron.
Wow.
So I was like, that sounds pretty good. Wow. I'll go with that.
It all kind of just fits together once.
Yeah. And the tetrahedron, each of the platonic solids, as they're called, has what's called a dual, which means you can fit another one of the other shapes exactly inside the midpoints of each of the faces. So picture a three-sided pyramid where all the faces are the same and each face is an equilateral triangle, and that's a tetrahedron.
Okay, yes.
And then now picture the middle of each triangle, and in the middle of each face of the triangle, you take a point and then you connect those points together.
Oh, okay.
Well, it turns out that the points that are defined and the lines when you draw them together make another tetrahedron.
Wow.
And then if you take from the center of that, those two tetrahedra, which is the plural of that word, and then expand that out, you get what's one of them, the inner one out, to where it's the same size as the outer one, you get what's called a star tetrahedron.
Yes, indeed.
Which fits perfectly inside a cube.
Wow.
And then the cube fits perfectly inside, and vice versa, on the next shape in the series, which is called the octahedron.
Yes.
And the octahedron is, imagine, sort of four equilateral triangles. Now picture a double pyramid, if you will, or a pyramid made out of, not like the Great Pyramid, which is not equilateral faces, but in this case, for octahedron, you do have all equal sides, equal angles, equal faces, and imagine this equilateral triangle pyramid, and then mirrored below it is another exact copy of it, and that gives you your octahedron, or eight-sided. And hedron just means side, and octa means eight, so tetrahedron is four-sided. A hexahedron or cube is six-sided. Octahedron is eight-sided.
Wow!
And real simple. And then so the octahedron is this beautiful diamond shape that Plato said represented air, and that fits inside the symbol for Earth, which is the cube.
Wow!
So if you take an octahedron and then find the middle of each of those faces, you define another cube, and then you can go ad infinitum between cube, octahedron, expanding inward or outward.
Wow.
Indefinitely. And that's what they call the dual relationship with those platonic solids. And the tetrahedron is the only one that's dual to itself, because that element representing fire in Plato's system basically mirrors itself. So in other words, sort of metaphorically, fire is sort of self-generating.
Yes,
or
indeed.
The spark of awareness, if you will, is is that it has this mystical quality that it makes itself.
Absolutely.
If you will.
Absolutely.
And then you have the other two, which in a sense, in my mind, are at least if not more mystical, is the icosahedron. So we've had two other shapes that are the four-sided pyramid, which is really three-sided with the face, the fourth underneath,
yes,
as
indeed.
The base.
Yes, indeed.
With the tetrahedron. Now the octahedron was eight sides, which is a four-sided pyramid coupled to another four-sided pyramid to make this crystalline shape. And then the icosahedron. Icosa just means 20. So icosahedron means 20-sided. So if you take 20 equilateral triangles and put them together, and I've got fold-up patterns for all of these on the Geometry Code website. If anybody wants
go to your
printer and print these out and play with them and just have fun with them.
Absolutely.
A lot of folks have done.
Definitely, guys. Go to geometrycode.com. Just a little reminder for all the listeners. Yeah, Bruce. Yeah, totally. Geometrycode.com. Let's print out these little printouts and put the geometries together.
They're a lot of fun. Yeah, and so cool. That icosahedron, and you'll get a better picture of what I'm describing if my verbiage isn't making pictures for you that show up. So the icosahedron is the most rounded shape of the bunch. It's if you were to smooth out all the edges and corners, it's the one that's closest to a sphere, which I think actually fits nicely with Plato's symbolism of the element of water.
Yes.
So here you have this most rounded, smooth shape representing water in Plato's pantheon, if you will, of solids, of shapes. And it is, in turn, dual to or mirrored by the most unusual of the bunch, which is the dodecahedron, which
yes.
we just talked about earlier, which you can find examples in the crystalline world with iron pyrite or fool's gold, and that I think if you were to try melting that down, I don't know what the temperature that would be, but if you could take it aboard the space station and grow those crystals, you'd probably find a whole bunch of them would be in a dodecahedral shape, and because you find portions of that shape when it doesn't run into other obstacles when it's forming, and like I say, I've got one in a closet somewhere. I'll have to dig it out. You can really see that dodecahedral shape, and then there's also some science that suggests. I read some articles in the last few years that suggest maybe our universe is even in the shape of a dodecahedron.
Wow.
Wouldn't that be wild?
That's amazing.
I'm not sure where they derive that, but there's some body of work that suggests that may actually be, the shape of our universe, but who knows?
That's amazing.
Who knows?
That's mind-blowing. I mean,
yeah.
So can Bruce, do you mind expanding just a little bit more on, so you were saying that in zero gravity, when the pyrite, right, the fool's gold, it naturally forms into.
Well, this is my guess. So
okay.
I should back that up and say that this is just a guess of what I think would probably happen.
No, but that makes sense.
On Earth, because of gravitational stresses and impurities and all kinds of stuff like that, I'm sure there's, if you contacted a crystallographer, they could probably tell you what it would do.
That's amazing.
But the fact that there are some examples of iron pyrite crystals that show both cubic and dodecahedral geometries, I think you'd probably find, in under the right circumstances, you probably could make, what would be considered relatively perfect dodecahedron in space.
That's amazing. That makes absolutely perfect sense too. That blows my mind. By the way, I'm on your website, one of your websites, geometrycode.com, and just want to let the listeners know, definitely going to want to check this out. Also, I was scrolling down a little bit and I noticed, let's see over here, the sacred geometry, where did we go? I just had it. Oh, here we go. The Sacred Geometry Design Sourcebook, Universal Dimensional Patterns. Bruce, I'm definitely going to be getting this from you. I saw this, and this is so cool.
Oh, there's a bunch of fun stuff in there, yes.
And this
was something that was a labor of love about 15 years ago or so when I was using a program called Claris CAD, which some of your Mac enthusiast listeners might remember from early computer days.
That's awesome. What was it called? Claris CAD?
Claris CAD, yeah. It was an early Apple CAD program, computer-aided design. And I used it actually for the most part to design control panels for the video broadcast industry when I worked for a company called Grass Valley Group.
Very cool.
And so during the day, I would design panel layouts with displays and buttons basically for what's called routing switchers. And at the end of the day, I would take off my software engineer hat, and I'd put on my geometry hat, and everybody else had gone home, I thought, well, I'm going to play around with some of these shapes, and my wife had an evening class, I think it was a Wednesday evening class, and I thought, well, I'll just, about 6 or 7 after I was done with my regular workday stuff, I would start taking some of the things I'd been drawing for years with compass and straight edge and basically by hand and used a CAD program to make some of these geometric shapes. And before I knew it, I had hundreds of them. And I was trying to pick the ones that were kind of the most classic, quintessential, universal types of shapes and patterns. And by the time I got all the permutations done, I think there was like over 1,300 different images if you count all the little small variations on the pages. And it's a lot of fun. And so some of the pages are actually on the website that you can see examples of. And it's designed as sort of like a coloring book for kids of all ages. I really have very little text in there because I wanted to be very experiential and have people jump in and start, take – and I made it spiral bound intentionally so that people could photocopy the pages and make the three-dimensional models and cut them out and fold them up and use colored pencils or what have you and make quilts or stained glass or whatever strikes your fancy with all the other patterns.
That is so cool.
And there is actually, since we talked about the tetrahedral lines, there's some generous references in the back, one of which is a map of the Earth showing some of these latitude lines where if you take the platonic solids, where you would find the intersections both in terms of latitudes and longitudes for each of the points around the sphere, the roughly spherical shape of the Earth, if you were to superimpose the 5 platonic solids over them. So
wow.
Yeah, that's so it's kind
cool.
of fun.
That's a lot of fun.
No, there's a lot of fun stuff in there to explore, and I've been very grateful to have had a positive response to that book over the years, so if people want to play with the geometric shapes, it's a resource. Also on the resources page, there's so many other colleagues that are doing great work, and I try to do every month in the blog the bulletin that I have that is also connected with the blog on the site. Just find people who are doing fun stuff with geometric archetypes, and then put those out there too. So, but anyway, enough of that. I wanted to get back to these shapes that Plato had talked about and talk about the dual qualities, because I think the duals are essentially like mirrors. So we mentioned that the tetrahedron was dual to itself,
right?
Or symbolically, fire is sort of self-generating. The air and the earth of the octahedron and the cube, what comes to mind as an interesting metaphor is that usually in Western culture, we have a lot of philosophical and cultural references to Father Sky and Mother Earth kind of thing.
Yes, indeed.
But interestingly enough, in Egypt, when we were in the Temple of Abydos 22 years ago, there's a little side room there. Dendera. I almost got my temples mixed up. I'm pretty sure it's Dendera that has the in their pantheon, they have Geb and Nut. And Geb is pictured on the ground, basically representing the earth, and then Nut, who is the goddess of the heavens, would be like the air that is the span of the sun coming up and set in the east and setting in the west, and excuse me, in that mythology, you know, she literally swallows the sun and spits it out every day.
Wow.
And you know, that kind of thing. But so there's that duality of the heavens and the earth represented there. And then the last two you know, elemental symbolism, I think, is kind of interesting, is the water and the I forgot to mention that what Plato suggested that the dodecahedron represented, this 12-sided shape, dodeca meaning 12, hedron again meaning sides, was spirit or ether.
Mm.
So if spirit is the umbrella idea or concept that ties together the other four elements, earth, air, fire, and water, of the traditional pantheon, then interestingly enough, spirit and water are dual to each other, or ether and water, if you go with Plato's representations, which I think is kind of interesting, because if you think about it, our connection to the cosmos, when we have those mystical feelings that we can't quite put into words, the things that come closest to it are the feelings. And yes. Water is oftentimes used to represent feeling or emotion or
absolutely
or the mind.
Absolutely.
And so spirit and mind, you know, could be siblings relative to how we perceive them from a finite standpoint.
Absolutely. I think that's a really wise conclusion.
which then leads to kind of the next phase of my appreciation of Plato, which ties into really the last 7 or so years ago when I got back into non-dual metaphysics, and it hurled me back into a number of different studies, including Plato. And one of the things that I think is brilliant is Plato's allegory of the cave, and yes. Which really ties into this whole mind stuff thing, because what Plato was suggesting that he suggested that what we all are like in this metaphor is wearied prisoners who have been chained together in the dark, and it's almost pitch black, but the only thing we can see from a little smidgen of light coming from the opening of the cave way back up there somewhere, all we can see is just a faint outline of our shadows.
Wow.
On the wall of the cave. And because that's all we know, because we've been, you know, we've become accustomed to this for so long,
right,
and gotten so entranced and convinced this is the real deal,
exactly,
that we think this is reality.
Yes.
We think the shadows, which are you know, pitiful representations of what we really are at best,
exactly,
are the real deal. And I think that's what so many different mystical traditions and philosophers have been trying to suggest for millennia, that we take what comes in from our senses, we take our interpretations of the material world, and we think, oh, this is the real deal. This
exactly.
is the big deal.
Exactly. We think it's like the end all say all, this is it.
Yeah,
we think that the, you know, the actual physical, hear it, smell it, taste it, touch it, manifestation is the furthest of what we as human beings have the ability of experiencing.
Exactly.
When yep. in actuality, it's the furthest from the truth.
Yeah. Or to use another metaphor, you know, we're convinced that that our understanding, you know, is at least touching upon the ocean. But when in fact, maybe all it is we're just droplet wannabes trying to grok, you know, a shadow of
yes.
an echo of a droplet. And I think that cosmological perspective, I when the first, you know, NASA programs were going on when I was a kid, and then I remember having to beg my mom and my siblings, and I was like, Mom, and she had this horrible headache that evening, and we only had one TV at the time in the 60s. It was like, Mom, Neil Armstrong's landing on the moon. We got to watch this. This
wow.
is historic. You know, and probably all the other listeners probably can relate. But
that's
so
amazing.
She begrudgingly let us turn on the one and only TV in the house, and we got to see, and now what would be horrible resolution, you know, Neil Armstrong setting foot on the moon, but then those NASA photographs that got better and better over the years of, you know, looking back at the Earth and realizing that everything that we know, and now, of course, it's, we've expanded significantly from that with radio astronomy and astrophysics and a whole bunch of different other sciences and disciplines. But, right. but for the most part, just about everything that we think is important that makes it across the screen of our minds and certainly our daily news broadcasts, whether it's our online or through TV or whatever, exactly. It's pretty much restricted to this one little planet.
Yes.
In this little backwater solar system, in this little,
totally.
maybe average galaxy, in a galactic cluster that who knows, I put on my most recent geometry code bulletin for October a few days ago. I usually by the end of the month I'm finally saying, I can get this bulletin together before it's still October. Anyway, I put one of the links is some like 20 plus maps that are really cool, and the last one shows a 3D model of our galactic cluster that some astronomers figured out how to make out of 3D data. And it was fascinating, and it shows our Milky Way is one little speck. It's a dot wannabe in this huge collection of this elegant system of tendrils of galactic arms and things that are all interconnected, and it's just this beautiful image.
Yes.
And there's an article that goes with it, and I'm thinking, wow, and that gets lost in the scale of the cosmos, and that again gets even further lost in really what is in our minds.
Wow.
Not necessarily our everyday minds, but I think the mind, the heart of the mind that Plato was trying to get us to look at, which is basically saying, if we're looking at the material reality as the be-all, end-all, we're missing the big picture.
Yes.
But we have we have a mechanism for contacting that through our feelings. Maybe it's the water spirit duality of the icosadodeca symbolically, and I think that's really the appropriate use of all of these geometric archetypes and symbols and shapes as reminders, and not to get hung up on it. And like the classic thing of the people making. Worshiping the finger instead of what it's pointing to, that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. So Plato's allegory of the cave, I think, really is a reminder that all of those shapes that are attributed to him, and so much of the geometric metaphors like the golden ratio, are reminders that we're interconnected, that we have this principle within everything that manifests. In fact, there was an illustration from Nassim Haramein, who is a colleague that's done some really interesting work with modern physics, postulating that every element, every molecule could actually be a mini micro,
universe,
micro black hole, basically.
Oh.
A black hole white hole duality.
Oh, what? Okay.
And that's derived from some of his just extrapolating of the ideas that he was sharing, that when he was I went to a workshop of his over a decade ago when I lived in Northern California, and I thought it was really very obvious reasoning and rationale.
Right.
He said, well, when he was in grade school and they were talking about the dimensions. And then said, well, zero dimensions is a point. And then you have one dimension, which is a line. And then two dimensions is all, everything you can put on a piece of paper, anything that's flat, right? And that's where the flat, name is escaping me. Anyway, the gentleman
no problem,
who did the Flatland story.
Totally.
And this wonderful little analogy of what if we were stuck in two dimensions, and then you have a three-dimensional figure who is penetrating your flatland world. Like let's say that we're all on a piece of paper and we're just little two-dimensional shapes. if somebody from a three-dimensional world wanted to play a prank on us, and they had a pencil, and they poked the pencil through the paper and slowly poked it through and then pushed it through out the other side, what we would see, first of all, we would see this little black dot coming out of nowhere. And then it would get bigger and bigger. Then it would be a black, filled in black circle.
Wow.
And then it would be this brown circle. And then it would be suddenly become this yellow hexagon. You know, I'm thinking of your typical standard garden variety, you know, hexagonal cross-sectional pencil, right?
Yeah.
and then it would become probably, you know, maybe a green or blue or whatever the color of the metal band is, a circle a little bit larger. And then it would be probably this pink circle. And then if you bumped into it, it'd be you know, it wouldn't be as hardy because it would have a little bounce to it because that would be at the eraser.
Yeah.
And then finally, it would disappear out of nowhere. And it would come in from nowhere and disappear out of nowhere, into nowhere. And we would just, you know, we'd call the two-dimensional equivalent of National Enquirer because we would say, wow, I just had this hallucination of this incredible experience.
Totally.
I'm having this mystical experience. What is it?
Exactly.
And I think that's kind of what we do.
Wow.
Because we obviously, you know, why would we dismiss any of our science? And I mean, it's fun to play with. But I think if we take it as all the be-all, end-all.
Right.
And do like they did about a century ago, you know, propose that we close the patent office kind of thing. You know, well, everything useful has been invented, you know. This is back in the 1900s kind of thing. And, well, you know, maybe the story isn't quite fully written yet. Maybe there's still, you know, some input that we could, you know, benefit from here. So what if our three-dimensional world is really so much more than we give it credit for? What if there's really an infinite number of dimensions, which researchers into regular polytopes suggest. There's a colleague of mine who I learned from a sibling actually recently who had just passed on a few years ago. I kind of lost touch with him, and I discovered that to my dismay, he passed on. But I got to meet Russell Toll in Northern California, Dutch Flat, where he lived.
Mm.
I live not far from there, and went over and spent a wonderful afternoon looking at some of his computer models that he'd done on Mathematica and Poveri and some of those programs, and wonderful things. These things called spiralahedra that nest perfectly in three dimensions,
that
leave no gaps anywhere, just in the same way that you can have a tiling pattern in two dimensions.
Wow.
Well, anyway, Russell was also brilliant at and among with several other colleagues, and I have these listed on the resources page of Geometry Code. If you scroll down,
perfect.
If you click on the resources page and scroll down to where it says links to sites about polyhedra and higher dimensional polytopes, you'll find some really fascinating stuff.
Awesome.
And I've got links to some four-dimensional animations,
wow,
which are essentially like three-dimensional slices of four-dimensional objects.
It's amazing.
Russell did, and he was nice enough to let me put these up on the website, and just beautiful stuff.
That's beautiful.
if you click on them, you'll see that each of these three-dimensional shapes, which of course we're further limiting by showing a two-dimensional movie of, but each slice is essentially moving a three-dimensional space, just like we would move a plane through a three-dimensional object. If any of your listeners have worked with the 3D printers, you'll probably get an idea of how that works. Because basically, and you've probably seen some sci-fi movies where you know you see like this plane of light scanning down through a three-dimensional object. Well,
yep.
if you picture, and it's kind of hard to wrap our heads around because we think that 3D is it. We think that three dimensions is it. If we could wrap our heads around a four-dimensional space and then imagine a three-dimensional space moving through that, scanning it, well, that's essentially what Russell Toll did with these animations.
That's amazing.
And if you watch them, I think there's four or five of them on there. You'll see that it's consistency from frame to frame because it's really scanning through. So just like if you were to scan, if you were to put your finger down, you know, your hand through a scanner, you'd see four little shapes, just like going from 3D into 2D, right?
Right.
Just like our flatline analogy with a pencil.
Absolutely.
You would see the first finger would start passing through, and then the second, and then the third, and the fourth, and you'd see little cylinder kind of shapes for a while, and then you'd go into the palm of your hand and just see one big oblong, and then you pass through your thumb and your wrist and so forth.
That's such an interesting concept.
This is what he did with four-dimensional animations.
It's amazing.
And it turns
amazing.
Out. This is one of the little, you know, fun trivia facts I've learned from my limited understanding of what they're called polytopes, which is essentially the generic term for regular shapes in any arbitrary number of dimensions. Well, it turns out and I'll get back to Nassim's analogy because I think it's really a good one.
Yes.
So what Nassim was saying is in zero dimensions you have a point, in one dimension you have a line, in two dimensions you have a plane, and in three dimensions you have all of our familiar 3D shapes, of which the Platonic solids are the examples of these remarkable shapes, of which there are only exactly five that have all equals edges and angles and faces the same.
Right.
And but in two dimensions, if you back it up, you have an infinite number of regular polygons. And the familiar examples there is if you take an equilateral triangle and then a square and then a regular pentagon and then a regular hexagon, a regular heptagon, which is seven-sided, and then probably one of the more familiar ones would be a regular octagon, which is just your familiar stop sign shape. And then right. You keep going, nine, nonagon, decagon, ten, so forth, and you can go out to infinity, and at infinity you essentially have a circle.
Yes, indeed.
So essentially, when you go from two dimensions where you have an infinite number to three dimensions where you have five, which we call the Platonic solids, then you go to six dimensions and there are exactly six regular polytopes in four dimensions. And so what the images on the resources page of Geometry Code are showing, if you scroll down to that polyhedron polytopes section,
yes,
and look at those animations, those are essentially like permutations or stellations or variations on those four polytopes, four dimensional polytopes, of which one of us call a simplex. A simplex is a shape, and again, this is probably really pretty mind stretching for it's hard enough even when you see the three dimensional shadows of these four dimensional shapes further minimized and reduced into two dimensional shadows of the three dimensional shadows, if you will.
Oh,
but
wow.
if you can imagine a four-dimensional tetrahedron, that's what's called a simplex. And it basically has the same properties of a tetrahedron except, many of the same properties except now it's in four dimensions. And what's interesting is that the mathematicians who study these have found really interesting properties, and they're applying them to, all kinds of different fields, including, physics and all kinds of amazing stuff. And then the one that people are most familiar with is the cube, of course. And the cube,
yes, indeed,
becomes the hypercube.
Wow.
And the hypercube is a four-dimensional cube. And you can Google hypercube and you can see animations of, again, the shadow of a hypercube into three dimensions.
Wow.
And then there's analogous shapes for the icosa, the dodeca, and the octahedron. But what's interesting is that there's also a sixth shape. And this is what I think is fascinating, because in four dimensions there's a sixth shape that actually has no analog or no equivalent in three dimensions.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And then from dimension five and up, mathematicians who know how to do this have proved mathematically that there are exactly three regular polytopes in every dimension from five to infinity.
Wow. That's
now,
amazing.
It's probably best that you don't, go crazy trying to picture what these might look like, because we're using three-dimensional equipment to try to imagine four-dimensional stuff,
exactly.
Which I think gets back to Plato's emphasis of his life's work, really, which he was basically – in fact, there was an article by an author who I admired deeply named Kenneth Wapnick, who's a brilliant scholar and also an incredibly kind-hearted person who has taken a body of information on non-dual metaphysics and made it very accessible for people. But he, in one of his articles in his publication called The Lighthouse, he, in one of his last one before he passed away a few months ago, he referred to one of René Magritte's paintings. And René Magritte is, if some of your listeners might be familiar with his painting, he's a surrealist painter who...
Yes. I'm familiar, actually. I'm familiar with René.
Yeah, it does some really fun, I mean, amusing, trippy kind of, you know, make you think kind of artwork.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And one of his, actually is probably on the surface, looks like one of his least surrealistic paintings.
Wow.
And it's this picture of a pipe, you know, like the old-fashioned tobacco smoking type of pipe.
Right, right, right.
And the caption is, "This is not a pipe." But again, you know, it's like some of the most profound things are really the most simple, and in this case, Magritte's depiction, you know, is as Kenneth Wapnick was pointing out, was really rather profound, because what he was suggesting is, when you're looking at Magritte's painting, you're not seeing a pipe, you're seeing a representation of a pipe.
Wow.
So
very now, but interesting.
But in our everyday world, we forget that.
We do.
So when I look at a picture of you, or you look at a picture of me, we think we're seeing the other person.
That's exactly.
Now, on a pragmatic level, I mean, it'd be stupid to say that I'm not looking at you when I'm looking at you, or vice versa.
Well, right.
But we're looking at such a tiny representation of even our persona and what we think of as our individuality, let alone the spirit that we are that transcends that, that we're missing the ocean at for the sake of a droplet, or maybe even a droplet wannabe.
Right? That's insane. That is so much power, Bruce. Wow. I Bruce, every single time you come on the show, you expand, I can only speak for myself, my consciousness, to say the least, and I definitely have gotten multiple responses from many listeners saying that they've learned a lot from you. And,
Good. Well, I always have fun sharing, and I remind myself of stuff I need to remember, so that's why I do it.
Well, it's really, you know, knowledge is power, and especially in today's day and age, when we're talking about the things that we're talking about, being the very constructs of the physical, you know, dimension, along with the non-physical dimensions, the very essence that creates the, you know, holographic universe that allows us to experience what we can actually call an experience is absolutely fascinating.
Right.
Listeners, lovers, friends, this has been another amazing episode of The Vibration Station. 50 minutes just goes like that when you're having fun, and not to mention transcending time and space when you're speaking with Bruce. That's just what happens when you talk, when you're talking with Bruce. You get your vibration so high, you start transcending space and time.
Well, I hope we all do. And thank you again, Dave, for having me on your show. And just to put in a plug for your wonderful shirts, which have wonderful geometric shapes like the Sri Yantra, which is the one you were nice enough to send me, and some other really cool classic geometric archetypes. Very fun stuff. So I encourage your listeners to check those out.
You're so sweet, Bruce. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate that. And as everybody already knows, you have to check out geometrycode.com. Actually, the first thing that I'm going to do right when I get home, and I'm not, I promise you, I my hand is over my heart, and my pinky is in the air, and I say the first thing I'm doing when I get home is going on geometrycode.com, checking out Ralph, your beloved friend
Russell Toll.
See, now I went on there, and I went, it said 4D. Let's see, I'm gonna go back on, because I just
exactly. if you search for 4D animations on
4D animation.
The resources page.
Scroll down a little bit.
Scroll down. You'll see links to sides of polyhedra and higher dimensional polytopes.
Definitely going to be checking.
You'll find that on the first little widget there.
Definitely going to be checking those out and expanding my consciousness with
it's fun with stuff. It's fun stuff. But I think the take-home lesson is that we're all so much more than our senses convey, and that we can use geometric symbols as one of many symbolic systems to remind us that we're way beyond what appears.
It is so true, Bruce. It is so true. We really are. Everything is interconnected and always expanding. Bruce, always unconditional love, light, happiness, joy, and laughter from our hearts to yours. Make sure to check out geometrycode.com with Bruce Rawls. Always tune in to the Good Vibration Station with your host, Davey, and check out on Twitter, Good Vibe Station. We love you guys. Geometrycode.com. Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you, David.
See you next Sunday. Bye-bye.
the shit. And all that we wanna see, we pump the same blood as these kings and queens. We built empires with wood from trees. We say eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Catch an MC on his toe. If he hollers, let him flow. Pray to God he doesn't choke. Fuck it, man. Let's smoke. Just another deep motivator and excuse to puff, puff, pass. Go back to class. Rhythm won't get you anywhere in life like that. Little to my understanding, I'm so young, shit is demanding. I paint a pretty picture with my mind's eye with a million words. I see kids holding up diamonds. I see stars.